You are the foundation of your family. You are the firm footing they build their lives on. You carry a glorious burden, and you never dream of laying it down. You carry it with joy and gratitude. You show up, even when you don't feel like it. You lead, serve, love, and protect. You are a father. This is the Dad Work Podcast, where men are forged into elite husbands and fathers by learning what it takes to become harder to kill, easier to love, and equipped to lead. Get ready to start building the only legacy that truly matters, your family.
All right, gentlemen, welcome back to the Dad Work Podcast. This is Kurt Storing, your host and the founder of Dad Work, and I am joined today by Michael Foster, and we are going to go deep talking about focus and prioritization with a large family and a busy life, taking action to lead your family successfully if you haven't shown up well until now, daily disciplines and habits to navigate family, finances, fitness, and faith, mindset shifts to chill out and become a calm leader, and the most important thing a man can do with his family. Now, Michael Foster is a husband to Emily, a father of seven, pastor of East River Church, and a business leader. He and Emily produce the We Made People podcast and newsletter to provide practical content for those who want to establish a productive Christian household, which will last generations. You may have heard of Michael as the author of the book, It's Good to Be a Man, and the documentary of the same name. You can find him online, look up his name, look up the We Made People podcast, We Made People website. You can go find him on Twitter, where he's most active, which is This Is Foster, twitter.com/thisisfoster, Instagram, all the rest of that kind of stuff. He's out there. Just search for Michael Foster. I know you guys are going to like this conversation. And it was very encouraging. It was very anti-hype, which I quite enjoyed, because he was just talking about life in a way that, man, he is doing so much in his life right now, and he's able to navigate the chaos, knowing that he's never going to get perfection in all of the things that he needs to do. And so how is he actually managing all of this? And I think he does a really good job answering that question, and many more. So guys, if you have been enjoying this podcast, please take 2 seconds, give this a quick rating and review on Spotify or Apple if you're listening on those platforms. And otherwise, you can join the 10-Day Elite Dad Challenge at dad.work/challenge. That's going to give you 10 emails over 10 days, 10 challenges to become an elite man, husband, and father to lead your family well. So if you do that, you're going to get a lot out of it. But if you just need this hit this morning, whenever you're listening to this, hop on into this podcast with my guest, Michael Foster. Here we go. All right, dads, welcome back for another episode of the Dad Work Podcast. I'm excited to have Michael Foster here with me. Thank you for coming on. I know it's been a tumultuous couple months, but I appreciate your time. And it is, in fact, good to be a man. So I'm sure that's where most people listening will have heard you from. But what are you up to today? Tell us just a little bit about We Made People, and maybe just family as well. How long have you been married? How many kids do you have?
Yeah, so Em and I celebrated 20 years of marriage this month, and we got married.
Amazing.
The 12th of July back in 2003. And, we started dating in high school. So we've been together 25 years actually. And, God has blessed us with 8 kids. We did lose one child. So there's 7 still with us. We had 4 boys, 4 girls. My oldest son will be 17 in October, and my youngest is a girl. She is 3. And, so we've got a busy household, and right now, like, it's county fair. So we've got kids coming and going from the county fair to go watch rabbits and then ride rides at night. It's like they all divide up in different groups. And Emily and I live a busy life. We have a very full life. We own a small farm. I'm a bivocational pastor, and it just never stops. It's full. So I became a Christian way back in 97. I grew up kind of a agnostic atheist, and so converted later in life, and never intended to be a pastor. But a friend of mine asked me to fill in for a youth Bible study. Never came back. So slowly I took over the youth Bible study, and then I became the youth pastor and then an assistant pastor. And I've planted 2 churches, both here in Cincinnati, Ohio. One way back in the day, 2005, and then one back in 2020, which I am the senior pastor at, called East River Church. In terms of, I've been trying to, matter of fact, I've taken my sales staff through Essentialism right now. It's a great book. You haven't read this book. It's fantastic. I've been trying to dial back and just make sure that I'm super focused on the things that matter most. You know, what are the vital few amongst an ocean of the trivial many? And things are, what do I want to spend my time on? So one reason I like It's Good to Be Man was a podcast I started with my friend Non Tenet. And I backed out of that just because I felt like it reached a good closure with the 75th episode. And I wanted to work on something with my wife and not really be dealing with difficulty of, you know, 7-hour time difference and all that. And I wanted something that was a little more story driven and would help kind of move past just talking to men, but also a broader, still do the men stuff, but a broader group. So We Made People is the podcast I focused on. We started it. My mom had a medical procedure go wrong that caused her to have 2 strokes. And so then we had to get her back to health. She was doing good. And then 2 weeks ago today passed away. So then we've been dealing with taking over her estate and all that stuff. And that's kind of the next level as a man. As you get older, you start thinking about probate and trust and passing on your wealth and total wealth management. And how do you not, you know, wealth is more than money. It's tradition. It's obviously spiritual wealth. How do you pass that on to the next generation? You know, how do you get it to your son and your son's son? And so that's kind of the stage of life I'm in. I'm 43 years old. So I'm in this, you know, I don't think we're having any more kids. It doesn't seem to be happening. Now it's like just discipling these kids up and helping them start to build their own families.
Man, you know what? I think that's why I'm sort of drawn to what you're doing, because it's so much and it's so broad, and it's not like, oh, I'm a specific expert in this one little thing. It's like, man, I'm just doing a lot and, you know, having whatever success I'm having, but I'm also sharing and, you know, I'm imperfect and yet I'm just doing it. And how, you know, masculine is that to set an example by just doing so much? And that's one of the things I want to talk to you about, is that focus piece. Because as I was going through just some of your old material, I was like, dude, you've got a job and you're pastoring and you're doing this podcast and you're doing this and you've got 7 kids and you've got, like, what? And I don't know what's that's like to have all these different things, because I've always just had my business and the family. And only recently, much like you, it sounds like, I just became a Christian last year. And so, like, that's entering my life in terms of, like, how am I interacting with the church and all that kind of stuff. But I feel busy with 4 kids, and yet you're doing like 8 times more than me. How are you actually navigating this? And I want to talk maybe just generally for now, but, like, very specifically later, about what about, like, the time with the kids? How do you prioritize that? How are you giving them one-on-one time? How are you getting time with your wife? So I don't know if you want to take that broad first in terms of what you're just talking about with existentialism, or essentialism, I should say.
Yep.
And then maybe specifically with the kids and wife.
Well, I'm kind of a sprinter when it comes to life. So I'll be super intensely productive and then kind of like coast for a bit. And so I started a church, bought a house, farm, and got chickens, and wrote It's Good to Be a Man, and worked as a business development guy at that time, all at the same time. So someone's like, how'd you do that? I was like, I just sacrificed my health. You know, that's like, and so when you look at a lot of the wisdom on Twitter, you can just tell people aren't for real, because if you're actually doing it, you know what this can cost. And people say, well, that's bad. You say, yes, it is bad. And so trying to figure out life's margins is not ever easy. And so sometimes you just got to go at 100%. You can't sustain that for very long. And that's, you know, you can go 100% for a short period of time, and then you got to back off. And you really kind of, as a general rule, if you kind of, you think about things, like when you're building like electrical structures or whatever, you always want to create 20% room. You want to oversize it 20%, right? So you always want to be running at 80% capacity, and not that way, just in case. If it goes higher, if there's a spike, whatever, you don't have a problem. It's kind of a good rule for life. Try to, in general, run at 80% of capacity, right? Always leave another 20%. So, for example, if you have someone like my mother have a stroke, what happened is that Emily and I switched on and off going down to the hospital for, and it was a 4-hour commitment just because driving there, getting in there, whatever. So one day I do 4 hours. Next day she do four hours. We did that for 2 months or 9 weeks. And, we had to do it to keep her alive. And we were having disagreements with, the administration at the hospital and how they're dealing with stuff. So what happened? Well, the kids got neglected to some degree. Right. And, but they're older and then what also happened? Like they watched screens more than they should have. So now we've had to correct that. Right. And then when we got my mom into a nursing home, then we stopped going to her every day. She was better. She was recovering. And it was like every other day or every 3 days. And she was actually able to talk on the phone. So I'd give her a call and have that conversation with her. And I didn't have to go there. So we slowly started to recover. Now that she's passed away, well, now I told my wife, we had the funeral Monday of this week. And then it was like Tuesday, we were like staring at each other at like 8 p.m. Like, what do we do? Right? Like it was, there wasn't something crazy going on for the first time in months. Mm. And then yesterday I said, all right, now we got to get back, you know, for me, I love the movie Groundhog's Day with Bill Murray. And by the end of that movie, he grows so much because he just gets this rhythm, right? This habit. And I said, my ideal life is to get a really strong rhythm and habit. And I said, so what we have to do right now, number one, let's get back into our family devotions. So we do that Monday through Friday around the dinner table. It's like I read scripture for like 10 minutes and we talk about it for about another five, or read for about 5 minutes and talk about it for another 10. It's very short, but man, I'll tell you, it makes a difference in your household. So I'll read a passage and then I'll say, what do you think about this? Right. And the kids will say, I think this and whatever. And sometimes they'll say silly, silly things. We'll all laugh or tell, all right, stop joking. We really have to talk about this. But once we get that in, I'm back to doing like zone two running just to try to get my 150 minutes in a week to, you know, 300, something like that. And, Emily, actually, I saw her this morning and she had started running again. And, so now we're like, all right, let's add our habits back in there. So it's a long way to say sprints will happen in life, and people on Twitter often are idiots that are telling you advice that, if everything's ideal, here's all the things you have to have, right? And you're like, yes, yes, but it doesn't, you'll be falling in and out of that in life. And so get to a place where you have those habits, and that way you can sprint real hard and you're going to lose, so you're going to pay for it somewhere. And everything's trade-offs, right? Was it worth to do what I did and to have the negative effects on my health? I think I'm willing to trade a solid church. We paid off $70,000 of debt from a business loss I had during that period too. Not having that around my neck. Yeah, I think I am. I think I'm willing to do that. But you can't do it forever. And so you got to look at your time and to say everything's a trade-off, right? And so when you say no to something, you're gifting yourself time in the future. So can I do this? Can we do this right now? No, I cannot do that. I have to spend time with my kids. So I think really busy people, it's okay to be busy if you're busy in the things that matter, right? Do not be busy in stupid things. Like, it's that simple. Like, why am I doing this? Why am I engaged in this argument? Why am I sitting here watching YouTube reel or Instagram reel or Facebook reel after reel? Why not go live a real life? You know, why not do Brazilian jiu-jitsu or take your kid to the shooting range or go get, you know, why not actually just do things? And so this, you really have to have a good idea. So for me, I have a pretty disciplined way of approaching how I get things done. I wake up at 5 a.m., take a ice cold shower, drink my coffee, let my mind clear. Don't look at my phone. Don't look at anything electronic. Don't look at my email. Try to keep it that way for about the first 45 minutes to an hour. If it's decent outside, go and walk and just pray. I'll listen to my Bible sometimes on my phone, but I'm not checking any notifications. Sometimes I'll sit down and read my Bible, like an actual paper Bible. And then, like, you know, your mind starts to clear. Then I sit down. I write 1,000 words every day. Some of it's crap, right? It's like morning pages. It's a discipline. Is always to write 1,000 words. So you just become used to writing. So that's, then I do sermons three times a month. Those sermons are about 3,000 words. So I produce around 40,000 words of content a month. Some of it's really good. A lot of it's terrible, but I'm always writing. And so one reason I have so much content is because I just made writing. I'm a writer. I started to think about myself that way. And so now, but I have so much content and I use it in multiple ways. So I will, when I'm working through something, it might be a Twitter thread, but that Twitter thread gets rewritten into part of a sermon. Or I do a sermon and that sermon gets broken down into a Twitter thread. And it's not, so I'm reusing content constantly. And I take lots of notes when I read books. And I'll try to sum up like whatever stuck out to me. And so what I do, I save it on my iPhone. It's in my Apple Notes. And I'll just write it there. I'll write that stuff at stoplights, whatever. And then when I'm thinking through an issue, I'll put in a keyword and they all show up there. And so I have like years and years and years of notes of when I first read Extreme Ownership or when I first read Spiritual Leadership by J. Oswald Sanders, or I've gone through Essentialism now twice. I have all those notes. That's hard when you write books because sometimes you're like, you're paraphrasing something someone said a little too close and it could be plagiarism. So you just got to like, where did I get this from? You know, I don't want to get in trouble. And so I do that. I wake up, I get that work done. My wife usually gets up around 7-ish. So I'm usually done with that. She sits on the couch and kind of wakes up. Then the kids start to come out, the younger ones. We'll talk to them, walk through where we're going to be that day, like what's going on. And so then from there, I go to work. I work usually 8:30-ish to 9 to 5. So I work 32 hours a week at my day job. I come back home. When I come back home, first thing I do, go put on my shorts and go run and lift. Just do it right away. If you don't do it, if you address anything else, it's going to get too late. You're going to be too tired. I may switch to the mornings, but I'll go do that. And then I feed the chickens and the kids come and do that with me. And then I evenings are with M. Like from about, we go to bed around 10-ish. So I get about 7 hours of sleep. So I'm trying to get to 8. But we, from like 8:30 to 9, it's just me and my wife hanging out talking. Folding laundry. You know, maybe we don't watch much anymore on television. So we'll like pop up in a bottle of wine and sit and talk and hang out. And then the way we do stuff with the kids is Friday is family night. So I say no almost always to that stuff. And then I won't give up Friday unless I'm out of town. So we will usually like play Mario Kart, Mario All-Stars, or, you know, watch a movie if there's anything to watch. And then Saturday morning, we let them watch cartoons and we'll go to like a park or whatever. I take Fridays off to focus on like church meetings and leadership planning. That's our flow of our life. And there's all these little responsibilities. Like I have to go to Home Depot to pick something up. So then I'll pick two kids. And when you'll have a lot, and you're at four kids now, you'll start to see this. They start to pair up. But I mix my kids up. Like I'm going to take the older kid and the younger kid. That's going to be weird. Let's see how that goes. And then we just talk about life. We go to Home Depot and we get the stuff. And now Home Depot becomes like father, son, father, daughter time. I got to do it anyway. And we just talk. Don't talk to your phone. Like just turn it off. Like I'm super willing to ignore people. I have 90 unanswered text messages right now. And that's pretty normal for my life. Just you have to, like when you're with your kids, to be there. And so I think you don't have to spend tons. That's really hard if you grew up in a broken family, figuring out how much time you should spend with your kids, how much you should play. The main thing because I used to be nuts. I used to play like 3 hours a day with my first two kids. We'd like, and I was easily guilted. And I'm like, if I didn't play with them, I felt like I was doing a bad job. Then I found out that almost no one does that. And it's super weird. And so what I do now is I try to make sure that I've had a conversation with all my young kids every day. Older ones, they start to pull away, you know, when they get puberty, like 12, whatever. You don't have to have a talk every day. But anytime I make sure I see them, every day I make sure they get a hug and I ask them how they're doing. Sometimes it's just like, I'm fine, you know, that's how teenage boys are. But I try to use my life to I stack as much as I can. And I think people try to get things, one thing done at a time. But I think you can fill your life if you learn how to stack and let things overlap. But that's the reality of our life. It's a very busy life. And I would say I work 60 hours every week between church and my day job. But we do spend a lot of time with our kids, and they're happy, cheerful children. It's been a blessing. So that's kind of a long breakdown. But I just feel like one reason we started We Made People is because I'm just sick of everyone having everything figured out. You know, because they don't. And I just don't buy it. I hate the influencer culture is toxic. Instagram is just where people go to envy so often. These can be awesome things, right? Obviously, we're doing this. I use it. They can be really powerful tools. But I think people don't understand how close they are in life performance to a lot of the people they look up to. I don't think they realize that these people, they talk a good game. Man, life's messy and hard. And when we did We Made People, I said, man, what if we did a family and marriage podcast where God was the hero, not us. And it wasn't us having everything figured out and just letting people know, yeah, we got in food stamps once upon a time, not proud of it. And yeah, we almost got divorced. And here's how we've arrived where we're at. And my marriage is an oasis, man. I love it. I mean, I love hanging out with my wife. It's like we text all day long and it's super close. And I love being a dad and I don't have any estranged kids. But it wasn't always that way. It was hard to get here. And it's just been kind of sloppy and bumpy. That's the reality. And so I just like, here's how we're doing it. Here's the real answer, you know? So I don't know if that's helpful, yeah. But there you go.
Man. Okay. So this would lead to like 10 hours of conversation if I dove into everything I want to dive into, but I really appreciate that because it was the broad overview. And it's so encouraging because I mean, I don't know what to expect. I also come from the so-called broken home, weird dynamics going on. And so I'm looking at this going, I'm not sure what it's supposed to look like because I've never seen it done before. Nobody in my family, nobody in my wife's family has like had the family that stayed together. And I went through, I think, probably some of that guilt you were talking about before, which is like, man, if I do this one thing to my kid, it's going to ruin them. And I only know that because it felt like it ruined me. And what I didn't take into account is, well, I'm going to be there for him. Like nobody was there for me, but I'm going to be there for my sons now and my daughter. And that seems different. And so I like the fact that like it can be messy and it can be life, which it's supposed to be. But one of the things that I've noticed in guys I talk to is when they have to reorient and put more into one bucket, I'm finding guys getting lost, going like, oh no, I'm never going to get back there. Oh, what am I going to do here? And then they kind of just crater. And I think it's probably to do with like the short-term mindset that is so prevalent in culture that I struggle with versus like multi-generational, like, bro, it's fine. We're going to spend a little bit more time in a year from now, and that's okay. But yeah. Do you want to talk about that at all? Is that accurate, do you think?
So I grew up in a, again, like pretty high conflict household. A lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, and a lot of poverty, lots of different types of abuse. Not physical abuse. Maybe that's the wrong way. Like I wasn't protected. Like we were inundated with evil movies, you know, just stuff that kids shouldn't see at a young age. And my mom and dad just like were disrespectful and fought in front of us all the time towards each other and a lot of anger, all that sort of stuff. And that's a really hard environment to grow up in as a kid. I was very sensitive, very intuitive sort of feeler, type of guy, you know. I read a room when I'm sick. I'm terrible to be around because it messes up my ability to read people, and I think everyone's mad at me. I'm like, oh, well, my wife, with my wife, I'm like, are you mad at me? And she's like, are you sick? I'm like, yeah. So I start to realize that, you know, my spidey sense is messed up. But when you grow up in a home and you're like that, you kind of got to shut off your emotions. You don't grow. You have stunted growth. Okay. And when you don't have a dad that teaches you things, at least in a positive sense, by handing that stuff to you, you're always going to be behind a little bit. And so I learned things in my 20s I should have learned in my teens, things in my 20s or in my 30s I should have learned in my 20s, and so forth, right? I'm always going to be behind, but I can close the distance, you know. I can gain, but dads are awesome. And without one, you have a loss. Like, I like to use adoption as an example. So adoptees will always have a loss in their life. And good adoptive parents know this. And so it doesn't mean they can't have a happy life, a good life, or whatever. But they have had a lot of suffering in their life that they feel a loss. And you just have to recognize you've lost something. You've lost a good family, and you're always going to be behind. But who are you competing with, man? Like, close the distance and don't worry about it, and make the ground you can make, and know that right now in America, a whole lot of men are just like you, right? A whole lot of men struggling, and you can make up ground. Like, I almost failed out of school because I wouldn't do my homework. I almost got a divorce because I wasn't leading my family well, and my wife was getting seduced by feminism. You know, and yet here we are, and we've made so much ground by God's grace. Get what you can get done. And I'll tell you this much, though, like, regretting the past, like nostalgia, I think of nostalgia as a killer, as a thief, where you can kind of get whimsical and wistful and look back to the past like it was awesome and everything was great. And there was good things. But a lot of times people are doing that because they're just unhappy in the present. And so they're really sacrificing their future a lot of times because they're so full of regrets. Do I have regrets? Yes, but they're in the past. I don't have a time machine. There's nothing I can do about it. God's forgiven me for my sins. I've repented of them. And so now I'm just going to move forward. And I would say, like, all right, so you told yourself you're going to be at your ideal weight by the time you're 30. And you're still as fat as you were when you made that goal. Well, nothing you can do about that. But once you start doing something now, once you start changing your habits, right? Like, just get going. And I think moving guys to action, and guys really think they need a plan. You don't need as much of a plan as you think you do, right? Like, I mean, basically losing weight is caloric deficit. Like, there's all these other things. Like, I'm a big fan of keto. But keto and carnivore, but one reason that works is because you're eating less calorically dense foods and you're more satiated, so you don't eat as much. So you can argue about the particulars, but how do you solve a financial problem? More income and less expenses. That's it, man. Like, so where can you cut expenses? Where can you increase? Like, start taking little steps, and then you get in the habit of winning. You get in the habit of doing things. And so I feel like I'm always just trying to push people to do something. Like, every time I do a podcast, someone's like, hey, do you have 7 books to read on that? Dude, you've read 7 books and you didn't do anything with those last 7 books you read. Why don't you do one of the things from one of the last books you read instead of me giving you a bunch of books to read? Like, I've got a bunch of books to read, but most guys that are trying to break free, their problem is they think mastering information and technique is the thing that will get them free. What they really need is a bias towards action. And I know that sounds like, again, Twitter platitudes or social media platitudes, but you actually got to do something. And so I just say, start doing something, gain where you can gain. And when I think of my sons, I'm thinking of generational football, right? So my grandfather was a cult leader on my dad's side and a bad man, sexually abused some of my cousins, was physically abusive to my dad, and put my dad in a mental institute back then. And they were really abusive places. He whipped my dad with cables at one point. My dad didn't do any of that to me. Like, my dad never beat me. My dad definitely loved me. He didn't teach me how to be a man, but he gave me what he had. So how far did he move the football down the field? Well, he moved it down the field, maybe just a couple yards. But now he wasn't a bad, evil man in, like my grandfather was. And now I'm able to move the football down, you know, way further. My kids will actually have a financial inheritance, and they grew up in church and they've been discipled, and I care very much about their education. I focus on all that stuff. Am I going to get where I would like to get to in this life? I'm not going to, but that's for them, right? I'll hand the baton to them and say, keep building Casa de Foster, keep building the house of Foster. And here's the next stage, son. Here's some of the things you should consider. And that's how you think about things. Get as far down the football field as you can and raise your children to the best of your ability to be the sort of people that will take the baton from you and say, I'll take it from here, Dad. You can rest.
Mm, well said. Man, that's one of the things that I think action, obviously, that's not by my own desire, just like how God made me, is like, thank God I've got that action bias, because that's seen me through a lot of things. And I try really hard, like you said, to sort of push guys in that direction. But what I didn't realize about action bias is that it actually requires time often. And I was not willing for that time to be passed. I was like, well, I'm doing the thing. Can I not have the result immediately? But no, you can't actually. And I think one of the greatest things of becoming a Christian for me is like, oh, now I've got a really long ball game to play, like a really long ball game, and that my own death isn't even the end of it. And that blew my mind. And so I'm starting to think, much like you were just talking about, more generationally, and man, the stress and the anxiety is just melting off. But when I do something for a long enough period of time, I notice that I tend to just do better than somebody who's only been there for a little while. And imagine that. So I think, like, if guys can sort of remove the shame and the guilt that you were talking about before, like, yeah, I've got regrets, but like, okay, so, and then what? Like, those are just taking away your entire life if you don't forgive yourself and then seek forgiveness through repentance and ask God to forgive you. But man, there's just like, be under tension for longer and you will grow more, and then things work out when you just do stuff for a long time. Like, is that where you're seeing that too?
So think about weightlifting. So if you haven't been weightlifting, the first week you're going to be sore, right? If you're pushing it fairly hard, that soreness doesn't break for almost like 3-ish weeks for most people. And once you hit a certain age, you get my age, you feel you got to be really careful. You don't want to hurt yourself. Like you don't live to lift, you lift to live. But I've found for me personally, at about 3 weeks of consistency, it starts to become more automatic. And so then I think about like, got to do this for 3 weeks, right? And so you're like, just, you are using willpower, but willpower can only sustain you so long. It's got to become more and more automatic. And so I just tell people, try to get 3 weeks of anything, right? Don't masturbate, guys, for 3 weeks. Look at pornography. You can do it. Cold showers, run, lift weights, whatever it takes. Okay. If you want to break free from that, like if you can just get 3 weeks, now will you fall back into it at some point? A lot of guys do or whatever, but you can break a habit usually in about 3 weeks, most habits. And what's good is like your willpower can probably get you there. But willpower, it has to start. It's just times. Like I like, J.C. Ryle, he wrote a book called Thoughts for Young Men. I really recommend him. It'd be a good guy to read. But Ryle, he says habits are like stones that when they start to roll down the hill, they start to fall, like they become more unpredictable and uncontrollable. Okay. So uncontrollable habits are good and bad, right? Like if, dude, I'm going to get up and I'm going to lift weights. It's just what I do. It's just a habit, right? It's just who I am. That's a good thing. So habits can be positive or negative. And when you're young, they're like a little sapling. Anyone can break them. But as you get older, you grow into a tree, and then not even six men could push you over, right? And so habits over time become more set. They become like, I didn't think of myself as a writer until I almost had my book published. And my co-writer said, I thought of myself more of a creative brainstormer, you know, like I wasn't really writing these long articles or anything. And he was like, dude, you are a writer. And nowadays I think of myself that way. And so I write because I'm a writer. And James Clear talks about that in Atomic Habits, that it becomes part of your identity. And so give it time. And over time, it just becomes who you are, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed about myself and the guys that we work with is that habits, the willpower for habits tends to stick a little bit more if you're doing the right thing for the right reason. So if you don't know why you're waking up to lift weights every morning, you're not going to feel super enthused when you start to wane in the willpower. But for me, I'm like, well, I need to be the grandfather who can still squat to pick up his grandchildren and then like run with them. So I need to wake up early and go to the gym today when I'm 34 years old so that when I'm 64, I can do these things. So I don't know. Has that been part of your journey as well? Like, here's why I want to do the thing and just be able to like really prioritize based on values.
Yeah. And wanting to look good is not a great motivation. I think like a lot of the motivation, I mean, not that doesn't matter, but you have to have the deeper motivations, the deeper reasons are the things that make it stick. I have this written on a whiteboard in my office at home. The best gift I can give to my kids is a healthy, godly, present father, right? Or to my family is a healthy or godly, healthy, present me. And so I'm doing this so I can be here as long as possible. But why do I want to get in shape? Well, because, I've got weight to lose. And one reason I want to lose the weight is so I have more energy, so I can spend more time with my kids. So I can be a better example to them. So I can be a great example to my own church. And I'm a leader and people follow me and they emulate me. And the easiest way to change behavior in other people is to first change it in yourself. And when I see behavior in my kids that I don't like, obviously it's my job as a dad to discipline and correct that. But I always start with, where is this true in my life, right? And where can I change that? And I've worked really hard in making our house a very calm environment. So not a lot of fighting, not a lot of screaming. It's pretty hard to provoke me to get me to scream, right? If I scream, something's on fire, or you really have stepped out of line in a very intense way. But really trying to cultivate an environment where we don't have arguments, we have discussions. And when we argue, we don't argue to figure out who's right, but what's right, right? We're trying to figure out what's right. And I'm teaching my young sons how to control themselves. So one reason whatever I want my kids to be, I got to be that. And so that's the deep motivation. Do I want my kids to be healthy? Do I want my kids to resist a lot of the evil things in the culture? Well, I have to resist it myself. Do I want my kids to be cheerful? Well, I need to be cheerful. Do I want them to be self-controlled? Well, I have to be self-controlled. And I think that's a big motivation for me. I want to be what I want them to be. And so that motivates me. And that's definitely changed how I do a lot of things. You know, these truths, it's hard to write books on them because they're like on a page. It's like a single page sort of thing. You know what I mean? And so I think it's like Jocko says, like so much is it's simple. It's just not easy.
Yeah, I've thought about that too. It's like, okay, what if I wanted to end up writing a book about some of the stuff I'm doing? It's like, okay, well, there's going to be a lot of fluff. Maybe that's why I'll stick to Instagram where it's, you know, very limited. But when you said that about being who you want your kids to be, I mean, I think that's extremely important. The influence that we have, they're going to use us as a mold to fit into eventually. And you hear it a lot, but, you know, boys will want to be the man their father is and girls will want to marry the man their father is. And that's a lot of motivation, especially now that I've got a daughter. And that's like a whole different level of, oh man, I better be like on my game. But I want to bring the discussion a little bit to family leadership and how much a man can sort of change the culture of his family if he hasn't been doing these things. Because on the one hand, you've got the men who have abdicated leadership and their wives are now picking that up. And, you know, for whatever reason, the wives want to feel safe. The husband's not making them feel that way, whatever. But can, have you seen, I guess, in your church community, in your own life, can you as a man with nobody else making these changes around you, can you lead your kids into acting better? Can you lead your wife into trusting you and following you again? Like, how much influence can we have when we are the only ones who decide to make a change? Does that make sense?
It does. You can have influence. How much is going to depend on how far along you, like, if, so for example, let's say you've abdicated and now you've got teenage kids and you've been married many years. Trust doesn't, it's, first off, it's going to be very difficult to correct a lot of the mistakes you've made at that point. But you can correct some of them. And that's what you should focus on is, you know, you can't, you're not going to, let's say you never played with them with their little kids. Well, you're not, your teenagers don't want to play trains anymore, right? You're going to have to find some other way to connect with them. If you've made promise after promise to your wife and not kept it, making yet another promise is not. So for example, women will talk down to a man when he sets a goal. Here's what I'm going to do, right? Women will say, will somehow show disapproval. What I think a lot of guys don't understand in many cases, that woman is scared to have hope because she doesn't want to be let down again. And so it's like a self-protective measure she's doing. Like, I'm going to lose this weight. You know, there's women, they get really worried about their husband's health, right? Or I'm going to get our finances right. And she'll kind of neg you in some way. And she's doing that because you've let her down so many times and she just doesn't want to get her hopes up. So what I always tell guys is don't tell them when you're making changes. Just change, right? I remember when I lost like 30 pounds, never gained it back. I still got more to go. But I decided I was going to lose weight. And I decided the way I was going to do it is just do OMAD and, you know, just beef and broccoli every night and then run 2 miles. So that's what I did. And I run 2 miles every day. I ran, if there's a tornado warning, I ran 2 miles, like whatever. I just did it. And I didn't tell my wife that I was going to do this. But when I get home from the church office, I'd go put on my clothes and then go run 2 miles. Come back drenched. I've got a lot of weird food allergies. So she doesn't usually cook dinner for me because I'm particular in what I can eat. So she'd see me eat the same thing over and over again. So then I started losing weight. And feeling better, she says, I need to get back to running myself. And I was like, well, that's great. Yeah, you should do it. I really support that. And she said, would it be okay if I run with you? I was like, yeah. She's like, I only want to run 3 days a week. I'm like, that's cool. You know? So then she runs 3 days a week with me. And then she switches to running every day I run. I ran every day but Sundays. And we'd go for runs and we'd talk about life, you know, and stuff. And improved our marriage, improved her health, improved my health. And I never told her to get in better shape. She's naturally skinny. She used to like seriously eat a sleeve of Oreos and down it with like Chardonnay and not gain any weight. Where meat is looking at it, I probably put a pound on. But she had gotten some more weight on her than normal, still looked fine. But I didn't have to tell her to lose that. She just started following me. Now, will it work that way every time? No. But it's, what are you going to do? You're going to scream at her? You're going to scream her into submission, scream her into falling? Like, you're going to guilt her? You're going to do manipulation? How's that going to play out for you? What choices do you have? Right? Where do you have agency? What can you do? You can basically use your example and words, and that's all you got. And if you start using other things as leverage, like withholding sex, withholding money, withholding affection, whatever, that is going to probably lead to a, you know, shoot off, right? Like it's going to get rough. So I say set goals to grow in the areas that you want to see change in the family, and then recognize that everyone's going to resent you for a bit. This is like the crab barrel idea, right? Like anytime a guy starts like dressing nicer, everyone's going to tease him, right? Nice shirt. Do they make it for men? That sort of stuff. They're gonna give you a hard time, And you just have to, and dudes do that. It's, and sometimes it doesn't, they don't really mean anything negative about it. And sometimes they do. Your family will do the same thing. So the crab barrel, as the crabs try to climb out of the barrel, the other one's pulling back down, right? And your family does it for different reasons, but you're just going to have to take some of the criticism. And, you know, Dad, you're trying to be Mr. Dad now, but where were you when I needed you? I wasn't there. I wasn't. I'm here now. Well, that's good and all, yada, yada, yada. I don't care, right? Storms off. Like, you could say, you're never, why would you ever forgive me? You know, like, I forgive you. You have mistakes too. Yeah, you can do all that if you want. But I think it would be better to roll with it and say, well, I love you. And just to, like, wear them down with your kindness, your discipline. Rocky Marciano, I love boxing. So all of life I explain in boxing metaphors. Rocky Marciano had a pretty powerful puncher, but what he was mostly good at is his pressure game. Was his, like, he just kept coming and coming and coming and coming. He didn't let off. And that's how you have to be, is just that pressure, constant godly pressure on your family. And like, I had one of my sons, they were getting in a fight. My two older boys were getting in a fight. I don't know what it was over. So Emily throws him out on the back porch and tells him just to duke it out and slams the door, right? I'm on the phone. And then these boys are big. They're like, you know, Huds is 6'2" now and Athanasius is 5'11", both right around 175 pounds, give or take. And I'm like, whoa, you boys can't do that. You stop. You go to your room and we'll talk in a moment. You come over here. And because I didn't want them to beat the snot out of each other. Well, of course, my son Athanasius, he's a little more intense, and he screams at me right away, right? Your temptation as a man is to match and go above, right? How dare you talk to your father that way? You know, it's your temptation. But what you want to do is you want to go below, right below. Like, son, you need to change your tone. Don't talk to me that way. What's going on? Okay. Well, here's what he'll almost always lower the volume down a little bit, right? And then when he does that, again, you go a little below that. And then you're turning the tension down. Like, you're literally changing the volume on it. You're pulling him into your gravity, right? You have a gravitational pull as a man. You're pulling him into it and you're teaching him how to manage his emotion. But you have to have yourself under control and not be insecure and overact and, like, you know, how dare you talk to me that way? You know, he's a dumb teenager. I'm teaching him, right? Like, is this a threat to my manhood? Is this a threat to the leadership of my house? If I could just tell him I'm cutting the internet off and not buying you new clothes and you're eating potatoes every day. Like, what was the kid going to do? Like, I have all the control, but, so I shouldn't be insecure about it. And so I think what's hard is not to change in yourself. What's hard is letting people pull you back into who you once were. And you just have to know, when you're changing, they are going to resist the change you're bringing into their life. And when you experience that resistance, know that is a necessary step in correcting your household. The resistance is them, like, is this for real? They're pushing back on you. They're testing you. Are you the new man you say you are, right? And resistance is part of it. And just, like, pressure. Keep being who you are now. Don't let them change you. If you screw up, say you're sorry, whatever, move on. But I think that's, you can bring a ton of change and you can fix what you can fix. And I've seen some really terrible households, like, be transformed over a period of time, 5 years, 10 years. And with marriages, it's almost always better to work out your marriage than get a divorce. Now, it's not always better, but it almost is always better. To, like, being divorced and trying to get married again, especially later in life, is a nightmare. I tell everyone this. No one wants to marry a divorcee, especially if you're old and ugly. They don't. And someone's got to tell someone that. It is a brutal, hard life. And some people got thrown into it, not by their own choice, right? Wife left them, cheated on them, whatever. But work it out, man. Do what you can. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah. No, those are great thoughts. I appreciate that. And I don't want to spend like too much time on the tactical part, but I'm curious if being calm was always the way that you were, or if you brought some of that anger into the beginning of your marriage and family life. How did you get that under control?
How did I? So definitely, I used to have a shorter wick and more explosive temper, but I definitely a little more, I can be temperamentally mild, but I used to get really upset about things. And then I started to think about them differently. Like, for example, like if you think of relationships as power struggles, your spouse is going to feel that, and they're going to sense a critical, judging mistrust from you, and they're going to mirror that back at you. And then, why are you being this way? Why are you being so negative? Like, why aren't you trusting me? Well, you know, then you'll get in a fight, and then that will be a self-confirming, like, prophecy. See, relationships are power struggles. Well, they certainly are when you come with that mindset. And so I stop thinking about things the same way. Like you have to actually change how you think. When I look at my job as a father to turn children into adults, right? I'm raising adults. I'm not raising children. In the sense, I'm raising them into adulthood. And a big part of that is just teaching them how to manage their own emotions and tell no to them. Their reaction to me is not about me, right? Like, I have a job. My job is to father them into maturity. So I don't take it personally, or not in the same way I used to. I really know what I'm trying to accomplish in the leadership of my home. So I think thinking about things differently. Like when we go into an argument, I like to always give my wife a hug when we start arguing. I'm like, wait. We're not enemies. We're on the same team. Let's just touch each other, because there's something about touching each other that defuses tension. You'll feel like that breath, and you kind of relax a little bit. Changes the nature of the whole conversation. And so I think starting to think differently about stuff. So anger is a secondary emotion. It usually comes from being deprived of something. Like comfort is the one. So I don't really think of my life about being comfortable. My life is, I'm a man. Like, that's why I love to start my day with a cold shower. It's not comfortable. I've been doing that for 20 plus years. And so when my kids come and ask me for something and they interrupt me doing something, I don't fly off the handle, because I don't think of my life as being about comfort or ease. So I think just starting to think differently about what your purpose, what your roles are, you know, that'll help regulate it over time. But it takes a little while. But also praying like angry people haven't resolved their issues, because it's all like bubbling around behind them. Also, some of it's just like lifting weights and taking like cold showers, bringing down inflammation. Like, sometimes your body's just super irritable. You're just irritable, right? Because you're charged up. Like, how are you offloading your stress? What is the release valve in your life? You know, I think those are. Also, boundaries, setting clear boundaries, like, hey, daddy has this at this time is when daddy does that, okay? Those little things done and cumulatively change stuff.
Yeah, agreed. Especially for me, there was the boundaries big time. I was just, you know, letting people walk over and then going like, why aren't you respecting the boundaries that I'm not setting? And then, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
They weren't. I know we got a couple more minutes. I'm curious, last sort of thoughts on... I don't know, speak to me. Imagine, you know, you're going through, you've got your four kids, you're about to get into the teenage years, you want to lead the family. Is there any spiritual discipline? Is there any encouragement? Is there any, like, make sure you look out for this, that you would want to leave us with before we get where we can find more about you?
I think the most important thing a man can do in his household is to read the Bible and pray with his family. I mean, seriously, what I tell guys is pick 3 to 5 days a week to start. And read a portion of scripture, usually from a historical book, just because it's a narrative and it's easier for the kids to listen to. It's not as didactic. You know, if you're going through Romans and you got little kids, that's probably rough. But if you're reading like a gospel or Exodus, you know, anything like that, that could be great. Read some passage, a lot of times in scripture, they kind of have them broke, like Bibles, they have little bold parts. Just read that, read it and say, what stuck out to you? What do you think about it? And then like, yeah, it stuck out to me too. Why do you think that stuck out to you? Blah, 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 blah. Right. And then you talk for a few minutes and say, okay, what should we pray for as a family? You know, we should be praying for this. Daddy's got this big job coming up and I should probably, you know, ask that God will bless it. Let them say, just pray for their cat, pray for their friend, pray for their toe, pray for whatever. They're, just depends how small they are. And then you pray. And then you start to also have them pray. And then you can like do things like sing psalms or something like that. But if you just get that first 15 minutes down, you will find that your kids start talking to you. Oh, Dad, it was like that thing we read the other night when you said that. And then you start building this culture around that. I think that's the most important thing a man can do in his home. And where a lot of guys go wrong is they try to do too much. You know, like I have these guys that kind of, they become Christians and now they're like, they try to almost like reproduce a worship service at home. And it's like, man, doing a little for a long time produces quite a bit of fruit. So I'd say do not neglect reading the Bible and praying with your children. Also, you cannot tell your kids you love them too much. You do need to encourage them. And you need to, like, boys get discouraged super easy, young boys. You don't want to flatter them, right? Don't make it fake, but encourage them when they do well. Did a great job. Positive reinforcement is just more powerful than negative over the long haul. And then you have to discipline your kids. You have to tell them no. And I don't know what sort of podcast this is when it comes to spanking. I'm against hitting, but a swat in the butt associated, it's not about punishment. It's about corrective. It's saying, hey, sins, bad behavior brings destruction into your life. It brings pain. Okay. And you need to instruct your kids. So you discipline them and say, here's the right way. Right. And you do it in control. I don't know about ever being without anger. Like just, you have to be in control. That's the main thing. Yeah. Those little things like discipline has two forms. It has restorative, right, and formative. So restorative is bringing them back to the right way. Can't bring them back to the right way if you hadn't taught them. So formative discipline is a word we use for it often. It's like discipleship. So how are you teaching your kids? How are you like, what is the means? There's informal and formal. Like, is the formals that you go around the table and you do family devotions, you take them to church, you make sure that they're, you know, they're interacting with the sermons or involved in whatever ministries your church has for them. You're forming them. And then when they walk away from it, you correct them and just it's okay. It takes a long time. Kids sometimes are crazy. Like my second born has like done crazy things for some reason. And I remember when he was like little, we said, we just got to get him to four. So he'll stop. He'd like escape the house in the middle of the night and do like nightmares. But power through it. Like I'll hear a lot of people say, oh, spanking doesn't work. I spanked them. Well, you got to be consistent. You have to have consistent rules and stick to it. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes often months and months and months. And also some kids just, it doesn't work. And some of my Christian friends will disagree with me on that, but I don't know. Athanasius, you could hit him with a piece of rebar. He would cry for a second, back to normal. It wouldn't matter. Why, that kid had buns of steel and it just didn't matter. And I learned that wasn't the way that we are going to get the fruit that we're looking for. So that's just kind of threw a bunch out there. Brilliant. There's some thoughts.
No, I appreciate that very much. And where should guys find you now, assuming they want to know more, which I would recommend? I know you got books and podcasts and stuff like that. Where's the best place to send them?
So I wrote a book called It's Good to Be a Man. You can find that on Amazon. It's there. There's an old podcast that has 75 episodes. You can still on iTunes or any directory. We haven't taken it off. And then also I'm on Twitter is where I'm most active. This is Foster, THISISFOSTER. This is Foster. I'm on Instagram at We Made People, which is our current podcast where we are walking through kind of how we've grown to understand marriage, family, children, all that stuff. and we're kind of just telling our story and using the birth of each kid as a framing mechanism for this first season.
Nice. Sweet. Amazing. Okay. Well, that is excellent. I appreciate your time on this, and I'm really glad that we got to connect after the craziness of the last couple months. So, yeah, man, I appreciate your time. Thank you for listening to the Dad Work Podcast. That's it for this episode. But if you would like to stay in touch between weekly episodes, why don't you go over to Instagram and follow me there? Because I drop a number of things throughout the week that are related to what we talk about on this podcast, but usually go a little bit deeper, provide some tips. You can find me on Instagram at dadwork.curt. That's dadwork.curt. And please, if you have been getting something out of this podcast, if it has touched you, if it has improved your marriage, your parenting, or your life, would you please leave a quick review on Apple or Spotify? Leave a rating. If you have a few extra seconds, leave a quick review. That's the best way that we can get this work in the hands of more fathers. And I truly believe that we change the world one father at a time, because each father that parents better, that loves better, raises children who do the same. And in just a couple of generations, I feel like we could be living in a world much better than the one we live in today. Your review will help along that path. And I thank you so much for being here to listen. Until next week, we'll see you then.